Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia question come to us from the website Medieval Life and Times Info and stylist.co.uk. Question number one, what is a hurdy-gurdy? Is that a singer who roams from village to village and performs at street corners? Is it B, a musical stringed instrument from the 12th century? Is it C, a term for a musical performance that the critics pan? Or is it D, a type of song that sailors would make up and sing on long voyages? Hurdy-gurdy, what is that anyway? And question number two, back in 1894, the Taylor brothers advertised for a medicine that will cure hoarseness for only 10 cents a box. What was the name of this so-called miracle cure for having a sore throat? Is it A, horse begone? Is it B, frog in the throat? Is it C, Ayers alcohol and opium cherry pectoral? Or is it D, laudanum supreme? Hoarseness cure. What was that product called anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of September the 10th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1847, that Stephen Foster's song, O Susanna, was performed in public for the very first time by a local quintet in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. 1847 today. And it was 25 years ago today, 1996, that Walmart banned Sheryl Crow's second album because of the song Love is a Good Thing. 1996 today. Hank Williams' Hey Good Lookin' introduces our country music news. It's entitled The Hank Williams Memorial Lost Highway. This is published in angelfire.com. It took 44 years since Hank Williams' death for his home state to get around to naming something after the lank, hard-living singer and songwriter who is still influencing popular music. The highway was officially dedicated on August 20, 1997. The often reported Williams claim that alcohol and a woman's lies started him rolling down that lost highway is now enshrined along with the entertainer's name as an official part of Alabama history. Williams penned his version of the song Lost Highway while hitchhiking and waiting on the side of the road in California.
Buy me one for 5 or 10 cents. I'll keep it till it's covered with age. While I'm writing your name down, I'll never pay. Say, good looking. What you got cooking? How about cooking? Something of me.
John Williams' Schindler's List introduces our classical music news. It's entitled, A Cellist Played a Private Concert for a Security Guard, and It's Too Much for Our Hearts. This is written by Kyle MacDonald, published on the 12th of August, 2021, in ClassicFM.com. A private classical concert for the person who missed the main event, this is a beautiful story of the power of music. One particular blockbuster concert of John Williams' orchestral music a few years ago was followed by another very special moment of music. Might have been a smaller audience, but it still spoke to the raw power and magic of music. In June 2018, the great movie music maestro took to the podium to conduct a concert with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. It was a night of his own music at Baltimore's Joseph Meyerhoff Symphony Hall. It must have been an incredible experience for all those in the hall that evening. However, as the musicians left the rapturous applause on stage and descended a staircase to their changing rooms and lockers, it became clear that there was one music fan who hadn't been able to hear the music that night. A security guard had been on watch in the stairwell all evening, keeping people safe. It became obvious she was a huge John Williams fan and would have loved to have heard the music that evening. With his white tie and tail still on, the orchestra's cellist, Seth Lowe, decided to remedy the situation. Leaning on the stairwell wall for support, Lowe played a private concert of John Williams' themes for a special audience of one. Very fortunately, someone took a photo to capture the wonderful moment, a soloist hard at work, and a listener in a state of utter delight. 2,400 lucky people got to hear John Williams conduct a program of his music, they said. One who didn't was a security guard stationed in the stairwell leading to the musicians' locker rooms. Seth Lowe gave her a mini concert, much to her delight. After seeing the photos, one follower said, "This is the sweetest damn thing." Another commented, "That musician is a good guy. He gets a million gold stars. I love humans doing good things for other humans." It's a touching reminder of the power of music and the generosity of those musicians who are able to share it. The cellist on that occasion is a Maryland native and has been a member of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra since 1985. Richie's Easy introduces our rhythm and blues music news. It's entitled My Must List, written by Lionel Richie in Entertainment Weekly, February 2021 issue. It's not so easy for the superstar American Idol judge to narrow down his list of pop culture inspirations. You're talking to a Gemini, says the 71-year-old of his contrasting zodiac twins. Let me make that perfectly clear. One may be a favorite inspirational thing on that day, and on another day, it may be something else. Books? That would be 1997's The Power of Now, a guide to spiritual enlightenment. You need to know that I'm a procrastinator by choice, so I need the messages herein as a constant reminder to bring things down to earth. How about TV? Well, the 2020 Netflix series, The Queen's Gambit, because it reminds me of life and music, because the ability to see your next move might be after that. It's just the game I play every day in my own life. How about music? Well, the 1980 Commodores, Jesus is Love. It will always be just that song if you don't know where you're going, especially in these times. How about food? Chili dogs. I'm still the guy from Tuskegee, Alabama, so give me a good chili dog every once in a while and I'll make more noise than you've ever heard in your entire life. I mean, it's just comfort. Until we get out of this quarantine, I may weigh 700 pounds. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled TikTok Boom. And this is published in Entertainment Weekly, September 2021. And it's written by Rachel Yang. The app redefined what it means to break as a musician. But could a host of new challenges threaten its dominance? Before pursuing music full-time, John Roseboro was a mortician. This past April, he started sharing his songs on TikTok. It's the best way to reach an organic audience, the 26-year-old says from his home outside Atlanta, where he lives with his wife and toddler son. Since his first video, where he played his self-described post-bossa nova sound on guitar, he's added more than 43,000 followers and attracted nearly a half million likes. Roseboro's story isn't a fluke. Many artists have found similar success stories on the app. Since its founding in 2016, TikTok has become a behemoth with 689 million monthly active users. It recently became the first non-Facebook app to hit 3 billion downloads globally, so it should be no surprise that it's also captured a special hold on the music industry as both an indispensable tool for new singers to share their music and a fertile ground for labels to find undiscovered talent. It's also served as a launching pad for stars like Lil Nas X and Megan the Stallion, and revived careers of established singers like Jason Derulo. You're able to carve out a niche and build authentic audiences without a huge barrier to entry, says United Talent Agency's Scarlett Perlman. We're signing folks that maybe went to bed one night, woke up, and saw that their video had millions of views. TikTok's put the industry on their toes because it's so unpredictable. Anything can blow up. Case in point, songs from the animated kid shows, The Backyardigans, hit the Spotify Viral 50 chart in May after TikTokers used them to soundtrack their comedy videos. But even with new artists racking up views, not all musicians on TikTok feel as confident about the platform's future. An increasing number of users are voicing concerns about unfair treatment on the app. And as we enter a shaky post-pandemic period where we're no longer as glued to our phones, it remains to be seen if TikTok's impact on music is as sustainable, positive, or democratic as it claims to be. TikTok made headlines nonstop in 2020 and early 2021 thanks to a quarantine-inspired boom of shut-in users flocking to the app. Its ability to regularly launch songs onto the Billboard charts, and its high-profile licensing agreements with Universal, Warner, and Sony. Popularity aside, complaints have come from some of its most visible users. In interviews with more than a dozen artists and music curators on TikTok, gripes mostly centered on the app's mysterious algorithm, long considered its best and worst part. The algorithm's machinations are opaque. It's easy for someone with two followers to get hundreds of likes, says Max Motley, a user who recommends and reviews music. And thanks to the algorithm, that rise can happen fast. I've seen artists go from 10,000 followers to a major record label deal within the space of 2 or 3 or 4 months. The inexact science forces artists such as Ty Verdes, whose song Stuck in the Middle blew up on TikTok, and help him sign a deal with Arista to take a more methodical approach. Verdes boosted his profile in the beginning by offering TikTokers money to promote another one of his songs. At times, he sounds more like a businessman speaking about data points and product. The key, he says, is getting a commodity that not everyone else has, which is yourself and your art. That means his music and his persona are one and the same. Notes Say It Isn't So introduces this pandemic adjustment news. Daryl Hall of the group Hall & Oates is quoted as saying, "Rock and roll and soul music are brothers from another mother. And few performers have dedicated their career to accentuating their closest as much." As noted in UltimateClassicRock.com, Hall & Oates played their first concert of the COVID-19 era last night, August the 4th, launching a previously postponed North American tour with Hits Heavy, 15-song set in Mansfield, Massachusetts. The show opened with a slow, soulful take on the 1982 number one smash, Maneater. Most of the material, Sarah's Smile, She's Gone, I Can't Go for That, No Can Do, Say It Isn't So, and their cover of the Righteous Brothers' You've Lost That Loving Feeling, would have been familiar to anyone with a best-of package. They saved some of their sharper hooks for the encore, closing with Rich Girl, Kiss on My List, Private Eye, and You Make My Dreams. John Oates said, "It's exciting. There's no doubt about it. I've heard reports from friends who have been doing shows, and they said there was a definite emotional charge, and some of them were really not prepared for it. They were like freaked out and like, this is crazy and unbelievable. But music should be a joyful experience on every level. And hopefully, we'll feel the same thing and we'll give it to the audience and they'll give it back to us. And that's the magic of playing live and being on stage." The group Japanese Breakfast, performing Kokomo, Indiana, introduces our rock and pop music news. It's entitled Michelle Zauner is Not Quite Ready to Retire. The writer and Japanese Breakfast frontwoman is excited about the future of her art. This is written by Kristen Yoon-Soo Kim and published in TheCut.com on May 27, 2021. The singer and author Michelle Zauner is entering a season she's dubbing Banchan Ajuma Summer. Banchan is the word for the small assorted side dishes served alongside Korean entrees. Ajuma is a maternal, middle-aged Korean woman, a madame, if you will. You know what we need to do, Zauner says? There needs to be a circle of women who make banchan like a potluck. Better yet, she says, make it a summer retreat where all we do is pickle and marinate assorted vegetables. At all of 32 years old, Zauner jokes she is ready to retire for the Banchan Ajuma lifestyle. The front woman of indie rock band Japanese Breakfast and the author of the just-released bestseller Cry in an H-Mart is coming off a whirlwind spring. When we meet, she is suspended between two press cycles. Her debut book has been out in the world for 2 weeks, and her new album, Jubilee, the band's third, is due in a month. The album marks a slight sonic shift for Japanese Breakfast, but the book is a stratospheric one for Zauner's career, a cultural talk of the town. On this May morning, sitting in an outdoor downing hut, reminiscent of a traditional house in a Korean village, we're keeping things humble and old school, a lunch special order of kimchi. After spending the past several years working on her twin babies, it's a wonderful time for me, Zauner says. She makes a whooshing sound. I have space for so much now. And once again, this song, Kokomo, Indiana, is from that brand new album that just came out. That new album is called Jubilee. Her memoir is an extension of her acclaimed 2018 New Yorker essay of the same name, which used her relationship with Korean food to trace her grief over her mother's death and the ways in which she questions her half-Korean identity. The book debuted at number 2 on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list. It chronicles Zauner losing her mother to cancer in 2014, starting her own family with her husband Peter Bradley, also her bandmate, finding new love for Korean cooking with the help of YouTube, and becoming overwhelmed with emotion in the aisles of the titular Korean-American supermarket chain. It received high praise from critics and readers. Zauner writes with feelings that radiate off the page, NPR's Kristen Martin wrote. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what is a hurdy-gurdy? Is that A, a singer who roams from village to village and performs at street corners? Is it B, a musical stringed instrument from the 12th century? Is it C, a term for a musical performance that the critics pan? Or is it D, a type of song that sailors would make up and sing on long voyages? Correct answer? Answer B. A hurdy-gurdy is a stringed instrument introduced to England during the 12th century. As noted in the website medievallifeandtimes.info, the bow of this musical instrument was replaced by strings attached to a wheel that was cranked by a handle. The instrument was lute-like in shape, in which sound is produced by the friction of a wheel turned by a crank at the end and modulated by keys. The instrument was also called the barrel organ, the grind organ, the hand organ, or simply the street organ. And the answer to our second question, back in 1894, the Taylor brothers advertised for a medicine that will cure hoarseness for only 10 cents a box. What was the name of this so-called miracle cure for this throat problem? Was it A, horse begone? Was it B, frog in the throat? Was it C, Ayers alcohol and opium cherry pectoral? Or was it D, laudanum supreme? Correct answer? Answer B, frog in the throat. As noted in a 9/1/2011 stylist.co.uk article titled, Everyday Sayings Explained, the earliest use of the phrase frog in the throat was actually supposed to be a cure. In the Stevens Point Journal, November 1894, the Taylor brothers advertised this medicine called frog in the throat that will cure hoarseness in only 10 cents a box. What a bargain. By the way, as noted in FDA.gov, in 1906 the original Food and Drug Act is passed by Congress on June 30th and signed by President Theodore Roosevelt. The act outlaws states from buying and selling food, drinks, and drugs that have been mislabeled and tainted. So let's close out today's program with a song by the artist whose Love is a Good Thing was banned on this very day in 1996 by Walmart, Sheryl Crow, performing a 2019 duet here with James Taylor called Flying Blind. Well, this run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.
I don't dare speculate, I can't predict the weather. Every morning I wake up, stare into my coffee cup, never knowing what I'll find.